whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market. Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Sabres and Sens tomorrow. It's a practice day for Buffalo today before departing for Canada's capital. And Marty Baron has some clerical work to be done the top today.
Please, thank you for reminding me. Yes, absolutely butchered the end of the show yesterday with my shootouts references. So, yes. So, Duffer.
Or Will. Was it Will or Garth?
It was Guard Butcher. Yeah, it was definitely Guard Butcher the show yesterday. Okay, I said that Linus Omark had never taken a shootout attempt for the Sabres. That's not true. He took two of them. He was 0 for 2, though. Never scored a goal. So that's this. And I said
I honestly don't remember him playing for
exactly. Him. So that probably many people did not notice the error.
I remember I made on this the one. Departure, the I'm out of here, I'm not reporting to Rochester kind of thing. Yeah, but
okay,
yeah.
And that's one. And two, there is way more than two players that have failed to score in the shootouts with the Buffalo Sabres in their time. There's actually given an attempt. Yeah, there's plenty that never scored a goal, but never were given an attempt. There's 25 players that went 0-4 at least one in shootouts in Sabres history. Yes, Pat Coletta is one of them. Yes, surprisingly, there's guys like Chris Drury, J.P. Dumont on that list that I thought Tim Kennedy was on that list. I would have thought, hey, TK's got good hands, would have scored. You know, so there is some names on that list. But
Drury
yes, there's
never scored a shootout goal for Buffalo?
No, he went 0 for 2.
Okay. Yeah.
He actually went 3-for-15 in his career.
Well, I remember the Rangers having a whole gaggle, if you will, of star players that were not very good in shootouts. So,
and his three goals are game-deciding goals, probably because he didn't go in the first three. He went later, right?
Can you run through the other 24 on the list just real quick so people aren't left wondering?
Okay, Clark MacArthur went 0-for-7.
I don't need the numbers. Just tell us who never scored.
I'm going to tell you the ones with the most, right? Like Kalaposo and Clark MacArthur both went 0-for-7. That's the most. After that, it's Evander Kane, Marcus Foligno, Dylan Cousins, Chris Drury, Matt D'Agostini, Linus Omark, J.P. Dumont, Adam Mayer, Jordan Leopold, Pat Coletta, Benoit Pouliot, Vladimir Sobotka, Tim Kennedy, Chris Stewart, Paul Byron, Luke Adam, Marcus Johansson, Phil Veroni, Jeff Skinner, Taylor Hall, Corey Connacher, Jimmy Vesey, and Evan Rodriguez. Those are the 25.
Where did Skinner go?
What's that?
What did Skinner go in Buffalo?
0-for-1. He was there for 34 games that they went to a shootout, and he went 0-for-1.
But he only got one chance. Yeah.
Only got one chance.
Well, mostly because Jack took the leadoff spot, and we got better at it. Because Jack would often score, and obviously Linus Ullmark became very good on the heels of Robin Lehner not being very good. So,
can I offer you something funny? There's five guys that went 1-for-1, 100% 1-for-1 in their career. These are going to be hard to come by, but yes, five guys.
You just go ahead.
R2, D2, Ruotsalainen.
Yes.
Like he went 1-for-1. Mm-hmm. Tony Lundman went 1-for-1, mm-hmm. better than Chris Drury. Tony Lundman, way better skills than Chris Drury. So Rasmus Ristolainen went 1-for-1.
That was in Anaheim.
Anders Bjork went 1-for-1. And Dominic Cahoon went 1-for-1.
Anders Bjork was... call up the box score on that. That was a stunning night for Bjork. He might have had the third period tying goal and a multi-point game before getting the shootout winner, and maybe was it against Boston?
You know what? If you, like, I'm trying to see Bjork, two goals, shootout winner, lead Sabres over Islanders, 4-3 win.
Okay. Yeah.
But the fact that you remember that it's not a
case of remembering. It's a case of over-researching for dumb things that you and I talk about. So at some point in the last year, I think I messaged producer Jeff right away, like, Does anybody remember this game? And then, you know, so then it tends to stick with you. So
Cody Eakin also scored for the Sabres that night, who rallied to blast the Islanders for the second straight night. Victor Olofsson had 2 assists. That's like how you get Google searches.
COVID season, that's why, right? Because they're playing them on back-to-back nights.
Yeah, I think it was later in the year.
Well, what year was it? 21?
Man, okay, let me go back now because I just lost it.
It had to have been.
May 4th, 2021. You're absolutely right.
So it was the end of the shortened COVID season. No one's in the building. This is why nobody remembers any of it, right?
Yep.
Like it's not, you know. It's,
it is a blur. It is definitely, it was crazy. Butchered. It was butchered at that time.
Okay, well, we'll try not to butcher the rest of it. We've got about 50 minutes to go, which will include the Great Dane as the two-time defending NLL champ Buffalo Bandits, who are off to a torrid 3-0 start, are hosting the Toronto Rock on Friday. And this is, I don't want to say a trap game, but the Rock have been terrible. They are injury depleted. They are not what they used to be. So Buffalo needs to stay in the exact place they've been, which has been rolling their opponents 15-7, 18-7, and 13-6.
I think that is going to be the same type of game.
Oh,
Duffer. I want it to be like a 15-6.
So I've been spreading misinformation off air while diligently trying to research the accuracy of some National Lacrosse League records. So there was a crazy game over the weekend in San Diego. Ottawa did not score for the final 37 minutes of the game. They had a 5-4 lead in the second quarter. The third quarter starts. San Diego scores twice in the first minute and a half. There were no goals the rest of the way. The game ended 6-5, which tied an NLL record for fewest goals in a game. 11. Yes. The previous 11 had been a 7-4 game. So this is the lowest winning score. 6 for the home side.
Yeah.
And 5. So Buffalo actually had a 7-6 game in San Diego recently that they won in overtime. But this all kind of, our discussion started with, has there ever been a shutout? And I was like, I don't think so. So I wanted to tell you, Marty, the fewest goals any team has ever scored is 2.
Okay.
So we've not even had a 1 standalone.
We're not at a 1, definitely have not had a shutout.
Correct.
But 2. 2 is like the shutout. If you give up less, 2 or less, it's basically get a trophy, get a banner.
Oh man, there was some, it was actually a pretty cool trip into the history books last night in the National Lacrosse League. There were so many times Buffalo scored more than 20 goals back in the day. It was just the norm. It was like
the amount of times that Buffalo scored more than 5 or 6 goals in a quarter has happened. Imagine that neither team gets any goals past the second minute of the third quarter for the rest of the game in a 1-goal game.
And by the way,
that is not good.
The game ended with Ottawa hitting the post with half a second left to tie it. Like it was very fitting. Anyway, it's Buffalo, Toronto. Hot ticket, man. The Bandit land is like pretty full for the whole year. So this is awesome. Get in while you can. And we'll talk to
some Sabres fans at the game on Monday. Are like, Marty, you're going to be there Friday for the Bandits because you guys don't have anything Friday night. And like, not this Friday. I got something else going on, but I'm going to get to a couple of games this year. And there's a lot of Bandits fans at Sabres games and vice versa, and they love the atmosphere, and it's awesome. If you haven't been, try to find a ticket. Like, this is going to be a fun night Friday.
Bandits.com/tickets, Native American Heritage Night this Friday as the Rock are in. So, Sabres practicing without Yuri Kulik, and Tyson Kozak is up. So,
no Kulik, no Malenstein, and no Greenway, obviously, who has been out for a while, but Malenstein has been ill the last few days. That's why he didn't play last game. So Kozak is coming up and really playing the center position, right? We talked about Quinn getting elevated in the third line role in the second half of the game after Kulik was injured against Washington. And I felt like Jack Quinn played well. Lindy Ruff mentioned on the morning show on GR today how he likes how Jack Quinn's game is turning around. We talked about his impact on the power play, especially on zone entries And I think that that has been building now for Jack Quinn. So he's with Krebs and Benson.
But he did start the last game on the fourth line.
He did start the last game on the fourth line, but on the first power play, which is like the difference is I think Lindy Ruff was looking at his top nine and saying exactly what I said yesterday is it's kind of like a game of numbers right now for Jack Quinn is where does he fit? But if Jack Quinn was playing at his best, he wouldn't be on the fourth line. You'd fit him on the top nine, maybe even the top six. But he's getting there. And now with Benson and Krebs, I hope that he continues to build maybe a different type of game. But given the opportunity on the power play to shine with his skill, I think that's going to work.
So what impact effect does the Jiří injury have right now on this group?
Well, I think it impacts the middle of the ice. Now that you've moved Tage Thompson to the wing, Cousins is in the middle of the ice. You have McLeod playing higher in the lines in the middle of the ice. And then Krebs, who had been playing some wings at time or fourth line center, now is your third line center. I think it affects the middle of the ice. It's different if you have on paper Thompson, Cousins, McLeod in the middle of the ice, or even Thompson, Cousins, Kulik, or Cousins, McLeod, Kulik. I think it's different than if all of a sudden you have Cousins, McLeod, Krebs, and Kozak, right? So I think it affects the middle of the ice. But I don't think Lindy Ruff is worried about that, and I'm not so worried about it because I have liked Tage Thompson on the wing. In the games that he's played on the wing now, in three games since moving to the wing, he's got a goals, three assists, and he's got 15 shots on goal in those three games. He had 15 shots in the previous 10 games playing in the middle of the ice, and now on the right wing, he's got 15 and three. I think it has changed Tage's approach a little bit with Cousins and Zucker. So I think on paper, maybe it looks not as good, but on the ice, I don't think it affects them as much, you know, where the middle of the ice is. It's unfortunate because Jiří Kulik, I feel like, is learning this year and now is going to have to, you know, miss some time.
Sabres, Senators tomorrow in Ottawa after the Sens were bumped out of town because of the World Juniors. They played nine straight on the road. And it was capped last night by a loss in Detroit, a game which they had a lead in the third period. They ended up losing 3-2 in overtime on Pat Kane's winner. Ottawa is 1-4-1 in the last six. Obviously, we spent a fair amount of time yesterday talking about the fact that Linus Ullmark is dealing with a back injury. So how much pressure is that putting on the Ottawa crease? Well, Anton Forsberg, as we know, because he's been around a long time, is more than capable. He's just, you know, been hard-pressed to find a rhythm. I thought he looked excellent last night. I certainly wouldn't pin any of last night's game on goaltending. And ultimately, you know, the Red Wings were fortunate to get a power play in overtime and win the game, which, oh, by the way, is their fifth consecutive win under Todd McLellan. Talk to me after the next 10 games when his record regresses to the exact same level as Jim Montgomery and Joe Sacco and the coach bump disappears. Well, you smirk, shirk, whatever, but it'll happen. I don't expect Detroit to go 14-1
here. Detroit's playing a little bit better. And
of course they're playing better. So did St. Louis and so did Boston.
Well, I don't
know
about
Boston. They are what they are. The roster is what it is.
Yeah, Boston is a bad team. Boston is bad. And I don't think that Joe Sacco is really – like he started fine coach's bump. Jim Montgomery, St. Louis has had some moments, whatever. But I think that I really like Todd McLellan as a coach, and I think that the last four games, Detroit has played a little bit different. Now, you mentioned
They've won.
Five, I mean, yes, because, yeah, they lost the first one, and they didn't look good in the first one. But he got hired that day, like the morning skate, and boom, played a game. Now, you mentioned the power play goal by Patrick Kane. So the Detroit Red Wings win 3-2. There was an interesting thing that happened early in the game. Dylan Larkin scores on the power play to make it 1-0. Duffer, I've mentioned this to you many times, and I know we cannot review everything in the game, right? It's just the way that it happens. But Detroit was offside by about 4 feet, okay? It was literally like maybe three or two, but it was a big offside, enough to say, oh, that's offside in real time, and it should have been offside. Didn't get called. Detroit spent time in the offensive zone. Ottawa ices the puck, can't change. Detroit now gets a face-off, gets a chance. Penalties call in Ottawa, and then they scored on the power play. I'm not saying the offside was a direct effect on what happened, but it was the snowball effect. There should have been a whistle. Nothing happens. Then there's an icing. There's a penalty, and Detroit scores. On that's why, like, I still think that there's a human element to it, but, man, do linesmen have a job that they have to do, because that can lead to something 2 minutes down the road if you don't make the right call. And that was an obvious one, but it got missed.
Right, but it's every sport, and it's most notably baseball, because early in the count, a pitcher sets it up to get a guy out. And when he doesn't get the call on the third pitch, and then we're into a 7, 8, 9 pitch at bat, the only reason we're there is because somebody botched the call, right? Mm-hmm. So, that I mean, I get it. Like, it's a super valid point.
I'm okay with it. I'm not saying I'm not saying you got to review that one or whatever, but I'm just saying there's a domino effect that we talk about it often.
Right.
Right? And that was the perfect example of that domino effect that happened on something that should have been blown and wasn't.
But baseball's going to be at the forefront of changing umpiring.
Yeah,
right?
Because of the automatic calls.
Yes. So that's why I'm bringing it up. It's like, the more we talk about, like, you can't help but wonder, like, how long down the road do we see some sort of change? But that's for another day, because we got a lot to get to here on this show. Saber-wise, is there anything else before you want to? I mean, the whole point was bringing up Detroit-Ottawa last night. So the Senators have 1 win in 6. There's a different wildcard team now that everyone is chasing. 4 straight days, we've seen wildcard 2 change in the East. But might I add, and we should have asked our terrific control room to do some graphic overlay like yesterday in development camp. So what really needs to happen here is, if you got your Telestrator out, you would cross out Boston entirely. They're not third in the Atlantic. They're not. They're wild card at best right now. Oh. They're going the wrong way. Obviously, Tampa's points percentage is way better than Boston at this point. So change your way of thinking. Look at the East as 2 teams that can reasonably be caught right now.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying from Buffalo's standpoint, obviously the Sabres have to believe that too. But if you're anybody that's chasing right now, you're not scared of Boston being barely over 500.
Nope.
And obviously Columbus just got in the driver's seat last night with a stirring come from behind multi-goal comeback in the third period to win it in a shootout in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, of course, gets a point again. Ottawa got a point. Montreal is crushing it by getting points lately. Detroit's won 5 in a row. Philadelphia squandered an opportunity. Rangers blew a 3-goal lead and a 4-3 lead before losing in overtime. So there was a lot of growth for wildcard chasing teams in the Eastern Conference last night. But allow me to have
a ton of, like, extra points.
Allow me to have my daily confession.
The what?
What did I do last night that I mildly regret?
You didn't watch?
I turned the Columbus game off at 3-1 Pittsburgh because it was making me nauseous.
Yeah.
And half an hour later, I looked at my phone and saw, what?
Well, not only that, the guy that we've been talking about with Columbus is Voronkov, who now has 9 goals in his last 7 games. He had 7 and 6, scored twice yesterday. Fantilli got a power play goal. Like, it's like Columbus is a good offense, and they're fun to watch. And yes, they're in the second wild card. You talk about third place in the Atlantic. It's like, and Buffalo should be looking and saying, okay, 10 points back of Boston right now with 2 games in hand, and Boston is third. Okay, maybe you're looking more at Tampa. Tampa finally won 1. They had lost 4 in a row, I believe. But it's Detroit, it's Montreal, it's Ottawa, all looking at saying third place in the Atlantic is attainable. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, if they're looking at it and the Sabres are, you know, 5 points back of Detroit, I think everybody in the Atlantic Division can look at saying, okay, Toronto and Florida are ahead, but everybody else could file right in there for third place.
Voronkov, by the way, is tied with Leon Draisaitl for most goals in the NHL since December the 1st, and it's not a one-man show. Kirill Marchenko has... It's hard to put into words the presence that this player has. He absolutely, like, he's top 20 in league scoring. He is, it's remarkable. I think he's easily overlooked. He's just kind of bringing along. And let's not forget, like, Fantilli is starting to pick up the points, which is huge. Yep. Kent Johnson, outstanding. They're still missing Chinnikov. Monahan got hurt last night.
Yep.
So we'll await an update on him. But I can't say enough good things about Kirill Marchenko. Like, between he and Voronkov, you're talking about, you know, draft picks from 18 and 19 respectively, and it's game changing for the, and the one thing I wanted to stress was, we know that Columbus has been really good at home, not so much on the road, and then it was only their fifth road win last night at Pittsburgh. Yep. The two players with the best numbers on the road, Marchenko and Voronkov.
Yeah.
Werensky has amassed the bulk of his great season on home ice. And this is understandable, right? Matchups, blah, blah, blah. It's super impressive that Marchenko and Voronkov have the numbers that they have on the road.
They've been trending that way, right? And that's the thing. Like, you want to continue seeing growth in players and trending the right direction. So, you know, I know that we've talked about Thompson, and I feel like Tage Thompson now has a little bit of growth that he's done over the last few games, doing it in a wing in a different situation. Cousins playing top line minutes and top line matchups with Tage and with Jason Zucker. Uh-huh. I feel like Dylan has some learning to do, but he has looked better. Jack Quinn continues to grow. Paterka, with obviously, you know, breaking out of that slump that he was in, but in the way that he performed in the last game, there's growth that has to continue to happen. And if the Sabres are looking at Boston and Tampa and let's continue to build that, well, those players have to continue their growth. And that is where the steps are going to happen, not just individually, but as a team. And to me, that's the biggest thing now. I feel like there has been some growth over the last little bit. Lindy Ruff once again said this morning, like, when you come out of a 13-game winless streak, you should be better as a team. You should be better as a coach. You should be better as a player. Where can we continue to see the growth? And that's what the focus needs to be on with the players individually. Collectively, the results will come.
Sabres coming off the shootout win over Washington. Columbus shootout win at Pittsburgh last night was highlighted by Kent Johnson and Kirill Marchenko scoring the goals in the shootout. And just, again, ultra confident, super impressive. And by the way, Merzlikins was a game saver multiple times, late in regulation and in overtime, including a stunner on Crosby. So goes hand in hand. And then, you know, we obviously saw Luukkonen shut it down against Washington the other night. Mm-hmm. With Jiří out due to injury, he's listed as week to week. Malentine, this is not surprising. Because of his illness, he's not going to try. It's a one-off trip to Ottawa. No sense bringing him on it if he's not likely to play. Yep. So Malentine's not going to travel. And the interesting comment from Lindy here, and fill me in if I was unaware of this, but did he actually say that Thompson was not able to play center?
It's funny because
Ruff said with Kulik out and Thompson not able to play center. So I'm going to need the exact quote here. Like, obviously we've been assuming that maybe Tage not taking faceoffs and all the rest of it and playing on the wing, but this is interesting.
The exact
to
quote
me
from Lindy when talking to Jeremy and Joe this morning was,
no, it's just now.
I know what you're saying, but when they talked about Thompson and dealing with something, he said, I actually don't think it's affecting his game all that much. It's something that he will need to just deal with for a little bit, and everybody does. So I think that there's a little bit of both here that can be true, right? That it's not affecting him much for what he has to do, but maybe it's affecting him just enough that he can't play center right now, and that's why they've got him on the wing. So, you know, again, it could be as simple as, maybe he can't take faceoffs. And that's why he can't play center. But everything else is fine. What's that?
He did take a few last game. I'm just looking for the exact quote. That's all.
Yeah, no, we'll find it. But again, just
I think what we're seeing is
when he shoots 103 miles an hour, let me tell you, if that was a very big concern, he wouldn't be shooting 103. And actually, Lindy Ruff said, according to their own analytics, it wasn't 103, it was 109. But that's not puck tracking NHL. But still, when you're shooting that much and that hard, I think you're doing okay. Maybe just a little something that's keeping him from doing everything he would want to.
So what are they really up against tomorrow with Ottawa playing their first game in a month?
Ultimate trap game for the Ottawa Senators, right? But
they've got one win in six games. I don't think you're getting a rollover, we're back at home, lethargic effort from Ottawa.
No, and again, like some people would have thought that the game against the Washington Capitals was a trap game. The Sabres were out west. They used the day to travel back from Vegas, and then boom, they go out. They looked as good as they have over the last little bit here. So that
whole Tampa just did the same thing, losing everything out west, coming home and beating Carolina last night. So please park the stupid travel nonsense excuse.
Well,
it's a joke.
It's not. Because there is certain
It's convenient when it's convenient. Let's put it that way.
I'll tell you this. There's times where I came back from out west, I felt like great. Great, great, great. And there's times where I came back from out west, I felt
Joke
like crap.
Life, man. Every day, like we all live it.
It's fact of life. Some days you're going to feel good. Some days you don't feel good. That's facts of life. Sometimes it happens that you come back from a West Coast road trip and you don't have it. It happens. But I laugh because I said that's the ultimate trap game because Ottawa's been away for so long. But look, Ottawa, for me, and I know Anton Forsberg was good in the game yesterday. I still think you have to test that goalie with everything you've got. The backhand, right? Like, Shabbat had a good game offensively, but I still think you can take advantage of him defensively. Uh-huh. Their third pair is not what you would expect it to be. So I think you have to test them offensively. Offensively, you have to go after that defense. That's the challenge tomorrow. Their forward group is really good. Their forward group with the Ottawa Senators is really good. I even like an Adam Gaudette, who's like, who's this guy? He's played well this year.
He's ice cold.
But I like what he brings to the game. Like, and the performance and the production early in the season was, wow, above and beyond. But that line with Norris and Nick Cousins, I think, have something to give. And they'll probably play against Benson, Krebs, and Quinn. So you got to win that matchup. But I still think you can take advantage of that group of defense, and you have to get to Forsberg.
Great Danes coming up. Want to experience Sabres hockey from closer than ever before? You can do so now to enter to win four tickets to an upcoming game and a chance to watch pregame warmups from Marty's seat in the 200. No, it's from the penalty box. I'm sorry. Visit Sabres.com.
Razor seat.
Pre-game to enter today. Dane Smith coming up on Sabres Live.